This is an interview with Jay Haberlin. I hired and trained Jay as my successor at Emhart over a three-year period. After I left, he became the vice president of audit for Black & Decker when Emhart was acquired by Black & Decker a year later. Subsequently, he was recruited to restructure the United Technologies corporate audit department, and after that, he became the United Technologies corporate controller and acting CFO. He also, at one point, was the chief financial officer at Sikorsky, a division of United Technologies.
Tom, I think that the audit department at Emhart, and you know, you were running it when I came in there, so it existed long before me, but it was way ahead of its time in terms of internal audit departments, and it's probably still ahead of its time. But I thought that group we had really contributed a lot to the company. We had things that truly could provide some operating benefits, but then we also looked at the controls from the standpoint of having controls that helped us accomplish our business objectives. It also enabled us to get out financial statements, but it was about, you know, being in control to run a business. I think that's something you don't find in a lot of audit departments. It started to get people to think that these recommendations could actually have an impact on the bottom line. I think it helped, you know, both the auditor and the auditee, because there are some you look back and said, okay, what difference does it make if I do it? Some, all right, you have compliance situations where if you don't do it, you get a problem. But, you know, there are other things that you can look and say, hey, if we do this, we can actually contribute to the economic prosperity of the enterprise. Well, and I never would have come had you not done something like that, because the traditional internal audit approach had absolutely no appeal to me. So I learned a lot there. You said to me one time, we had this big fat report, and you said to me, I like the report, but I want you to take it with the express objective of reducing or getting rid of every other word. I mean, I remember meeting with folks from Deloitte that Peter Scott hired after we had issued that report. He hired Deloitte to go in and do a review of the hardware division. And when I met with a Deloitte partner before they issued the report, I said to him, what's your report look like? And he said, you won't see anything in our report that you didn't already have in your report. They paid $1 million for it. I thought it was a good relationship. You're a good thinker. In fact, I remember you used to carve out time during the day to think. You know, the JIT stuff, I just think that was a nice compliment. You know, you had some just good manufacturing folks. Obviously, that stuff was a nice fit with what we did from an audit perspective. Even having some of those guys work on some of the engagements, I just think it was a nice fit. What we call JIT has been repackaged a number of times. When you look at lean manufacturing, it looks pretty familiar with what we used to do. Everything from pull signals, you know, Kanban, to shop floor layout, setup production, cellular manufacturing. We did actual consulting arrangements with the businesses. We would provide hands-on consulting. We also did do a lot of training, got their folks involved as well. We also did 4-fee consulting for third parties, which I think is something very unique in the world of internal audit. But also, I mean, there was, a lot of support lent to the audit process by the consulting group in terms of manufacturing expertise that was helpful. I think we also tried to develop good relationships with the management of the business, trying to make the audit as productive as possible. We would try to, you know, at Emhart, Black & Decker, and the UTC, have them be part of that recommendation or solution developing process. One, then they had input into it. Two, you got their just general subject matter knowledge and specific business knowledge. And, you know, it was a kind of an iterative approach that gave you kind of a nice product at the end. I think our audits provided a lot of good consulting benefit. So I think that was just a nice fit. You're right. Early on, people say, well, that's hard to do. It's kind of abstract. But it's really not. You just have to get yourself in the mindset of thinking that way. So yeah. I think it was just very valuable. And I think it's very valuable for anybody looking at controls. Because it also forced you to say, why do we have these controls? What exactly is I'm trying to accomplish? You know, in terms of what I've done since then, obviously I took over for you at Emhart, so I appreciate that. And then when we got acquired in 89, I went down to Maryland as the Vice President General Auditor for Black & Decker, which, Tom, was an endorsement of what we did at Emhart versus what they did at Black & Decker, which was pretty stereotypical internal auditing designed to reduce Ernst & Young's fees. We changed their approach to our approach. I went down to Maryland to meet with the Black & Decker executive team and then the audit committee. And then I was just kind of waiting around, waiting for Akeem and a ride home. And he came in to me and he said, well, he said, I have good news and bad news. I said, well, what's that? He said, well, the good news is they like our approach and they want to switch. They think it's preferable to what they have. He said, the bad news is I want you to run it. The department ended up being about half and half, half Emhart people, half Black & Decker people. It was a tough transition because I think that what we did at Emhart, it was fun, but it required the auditors to think a lot. You know, it wasn't a rote checklist kind of approach. Understand the business. You really had to understand what made it work and how it was controlled. So it required the auditors to think an awful lot. It worked pretty well, Black & Decker. You know, it was interesting, Tom. When I was at Black & Decker during an audit committee meeting one time, there was a woman, Barbara, she was Secretary of Commerce, big in internal audit circles. I'm trying to think of her last name now. Anyway, she asked me one time what percentage of our time was devoted to operational audits versus financial audits. And I said to her, I'd like to be able to give you the answer, but I said, I don't have a clue because a lot of it depends on how you parse the definition of operational versus financial. And I said, if I go in and a business has very poor internal accounting controls, perhaps the biggest operational benefit I can give them is to help them get some fundamental internal accounting controls. I said, is that operational or financial? I don't know. I said, what we try to do is go in and look and see where the business needs the most help and provide benefit in that area. It was interesting because there was a guy named Mark Willis on our board who was the chairman, I think, of General Mills at the time. And he made a comment. He said, that's the first sensible explanation I've ever heard, operational versus financial auditing. So, Steve Page, I'd worked with Steve extensively at Black & Decker. In fact, Steve had, you know, been at Black & Decker for 20 years and was recruited to come up to UTC to work for the then relatively new president, George David. That was in January of 93. Steve and I talked in the summer of 93, and then I started here in February 28, 1994, as their head of internal audit. You know, to a large degree, what I did is blew up what they had here and put in place something that looked very similar to what we had at Emhart. It had the control focus of the audit and some of the operational aspects. It didn't have the just-in-time team, but it was a substantial change to what they had before. I was hired because my boss said, look, I have an internal audit department that is uniformly hated by the businesses. They're perceived as a gotcha kind of ticket writer, police mentality audit function. They're not viewed as being value-added. And he said, I need you to change that, and I need you to do something more like what we had at Black & Decker, which is obviously what we had at Emhart. And I used to say this to the auditors here at the UTC. I would say, if you can't make a fairly strong link between what you're recommending and an improvement in earnings per share, I want you to go back and rethink things. I thought that the auditors who are here would really welcome the change in approach. It was exciting and fun and everything else. And what I found was an awful lot of resistance from a lot of folks. And it was resistance because it was hard. You know, they really had to understand the business, and they really had to think about what they were doing and what they were saying. And I literally had people say to me, they said, I'm embarrassed to say this, but it was easier when it was just a checklist. It was either there or not. We ended up changing a lot of people. We ended up doing some of the stuff we did at Emhart in terms of getting folks from the businesses as well, some operating folks who were not auditors. We hired some folks from public accounting, but we hired some interesting backgrounds. We hired consultants. We hired others. But you know who does that still a lot? Is GE. You know, and their audit department is held in very high regard because not only is it good for the businesses, but also you really develop some talent that way. At UTC, it was spectacular. We were the largest single source of talent for the corporation in finance. Frankly, I had trouble hanging on to people in the audit department. People tended to spend 2 years and then go into a business. I would say probably 90-plus percent did that. But that also helps you then attract more people, develop folks who really dug in, understood the business, and one, they had recommendations that were pretty good, but two, you know, they learned a lot. So they really had a good understanding of the business. I said, Tom, the biggest thing that I find, and you know, is there still is, I think, on the part of businesses and the part of auditors, there's a fundamental lack of understanding about what internal controls are, what controls are. I think they're still largely viewed as constraints, as bolt-on kinds of things that prevent you from doing what you really want to do, as opposed to things that are kind of an integral part of the infrastructure and help you accomplish your business objectives. I used to have a little example I tried to use, a very simplistic one, to explain to folks here what I was talking about. And I said, if I said to you, I'll build you a house, but I'm not sure what it's going to look like, what it's going to cost, or when it's going to be done, you probably wouldn't view that as being terribly satisfactory. So you'd want to have some controls or some items established so you had some clue of what it might look like, when it might be done, or what you might be spending on it. And I said, that's really all we're talking about. You know, it gets a little more sophisticated, but and on one hand, you look at it and say you wouldn't dream of doing it without that. On the other hand, you can't understand why auditors want to make you do something. So there you get people thinking about what it is they're trying to accomplish. And I think that's the biggest area that I don't see people doing is thinking about what it is they're trying to do.